Developing the leaders in our formation is an essential effort to managing and growing our organizations, as well as stewarding the profession in our Army. If you are like me and many of our other listeners, you may wonder, where do I even start in creating a leader development plan for my organization? This week in the huddle, we discuss that very topic by welcoming in a dynamic leader who recently handed over the guidon for his second company command. Doug Mayer is the force behind the popular Hay in the Barn Leader weekly email and blog. He joins the podcast today to discuss designing and executing a leader development plan at the company level. This is Leaders Huddle Podcast, episode number 35, Intentional Leader Development at the Company Level. We all know that leader development is the lifeblood and competitive advantage of the Army, but do we really know where to start or how to execute a leader development program? Our guest today has a unique and very intentional method for his organization's leader development plan. Joining our conversation today is Captain Doug Mayer. Doug is a 2009 Norwich University graduate. An infantry officer, Doug's operational assignments include platoon leader, XO, and command time with the 2nd Brigade 101st. Currently stationed at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, Doug is wrapping up his 2nd Command and 1st Brigade 2nd ID as Apache 6 for Alpha Company 123 Infantry. Doug's civilian education includes a bachelor's from Norwich, as well as a master's in organizational leadership from his alma mater. Doug, it's been a few months in the making, so we're very glad we could finally get you on the podcast. Please fill any gaps from your bio.
Hey, brother, it's great to be here. First, I want to thank you. It really is an honor, and I'm a huge fan of the podcast. You guys are adding value to the lives of soldiers and leaders while contributing to the professional canon. So for that, I want to thank you. As for my career thus far, you captured it pretty well. Started out doing a little TDY stint for Cadet Command here at JBLM, and that was part of the LDAC that they used to run here. And then usual fort bedding experience for young infantry lieutenants. 3 years at Fort Campbell that included a deployment, and then ended up back here at JBLM after the career course. And since I've been here, I've been in three different battalions in our brigade. Apparently, I needed a lot of retraining. And then along the way, I managed to trick an amazing woman, Allie, into marrying me, and we had two fierce and enthusiastic little girls, Bailey and Caroline.
And I recall prior to our discussion, are you changing out command this week? Is that right?
It's next week. So this is the last week of change of command inventories, and then the change of command is scheduled for what will be the 26th.
And you're moving on. What's your next assignment? So, Kira listens in. What's your moving on? What are you moving on to?
Yeah, so I'm heading up to 1st Corps here at Joint Base Lewis-McChord to work as the commanding general speechwriter, and I'll be doing that until approximately April, and then I'll PCS to the DC area for the Joint Chief Staff internship.
Okay. Awesome. Those are two incredible assignments, and we'll definitely stay in touch. And I'm interested to see the work coming out of First Corps. So hey, let's jump into the first couple of questions. Looking back at my own command, you know, I knew leader development was important, and I got after that through my command philosophy and routine counseling and reading assignments and other projects. But when I look at what you're doing out there at Fort Lewis, I think you're taking it to another level with Apache Company. So when you sat down to map out your leader development plan, what did that process look like and how did you start?
Yeah, the truth is I'm just not good enough to do it off the cuff. The number one resource we have as an Army is the American soldier and leader. So why would we invest a deliberate process in unit training management, property, and other facets of command while relegating leader development to an afterthought or a white space? Look, it isn't rocket science, and most of you out there listening are probably doing this as well, if not better. It's a process, not a program. It's interactive, evolving, and it can't be check the box. Like anything else, we start with the end in mind. We need leaders who are values-based and character-driven. Leaders who communicate and hold the standard. Leaders who are tactically proficient, because we can't forget that our mission is to win wars. And then finally, we need empowered leaders who are agile, both physically and cognitively, and who lead to trust. there, we used the Army Leader Development Strategy domains to mind map the needs of our organization. So we started out with ends, and then we moved to needs. Obviously, we're heavy in the operational realm, but we touch all three. We send our folks to Army and civilian schooling for their institutional development, and we facilitate self-development through recommended readings and inculcating a desire to learn and improve. So those are all structured examples, but we capitalize on unscripted moments as well. This could be an individual engagement regarding a personal area of growth, or simply shooting a text message out to leaders with the link to a podcast that you just listened to on your drive home. And if you didn't catch that, that was a shameless plug for all you guys out there to text the link to this podcast out to your leaders.
So starting with the end in mind, that sounds a lot like one of Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Was that a pre-read list for you as well prior to going in command?
Yeah, for me, definitely. Part of the curriculum for the master's I did, and I'd like to say that I was well-read before that, but probably just not that good. I went into my master's and had a list of books to read for that program, and Stephen Covey was one of those reads for sure, and one that we shared with the team, as well as you know, things like Jim Collins' Good to Great,
right,
or any of the Ken Blanchard series.
Yeah, I haven't read Ken Blanchard. I got to get to that right now. I'm working through the Leadership Challenge by Kozis and Posner, which was recommended from the book Taking the Guide On. So I'm working through that right now.
Yeah, great book.
Oh. Yep. So understanding starting off with having the end in mind, how did you nest your leader development plan with your higher headquarters?
Yeah, this is actually something that will help you guys, because time's limited, and you leaders out there are living it every day. If there's an area of your development plan that your higher headquarters is already covering extensively, just have the humility and the agility to focus attention elsewhere. It frees up time for you. So, you know, tactically, leaders are always answering, where do I need to be right now? Where can you most effectively impact the accomplishment of your mission? And leader development's no different. So going into this second command, my previous battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Teddy Kleisner, made tactical decision games a massive part of his development of lieutenants, and he was really good at them. They were a fun experience to be a part of, and it was something that you looked forward to instead of just dragging your feet to another LPD up a battalion. And so between those sessions, the intensive training cycle building to our Pacific Pathways deployment, and then the training reps that we got in the Pacific, I realized I could pare down my tactical focus and my metal focus to a few key exercises prior to those major events. And that freed up time for us to invest in the art of leadership. Our curriculum and framework covered organizational leadership and the profession of arms, and then the overlap. So picture it as a Venn diagram. One week, we might discuss a CBS 60 Minutes report with Nick Saban, and the next week, shifting gears to a whiteboard session on conducting a striker penetration in the PACOM AOR. And all the while, working through Brafman and Beckstrom's book, The Starfish and the Spider, or Pat Lencioni's The Ideal Team Player, and using downtime to discuss the concepts. It was all about applying a framework and process to make the most out of each moment, viewing that moment as a gift and an opportunity to get better as a team.
So, Doug, I'm curious, did those discussions involve just your PLs and XO, or what was the intended audience for these whiteboard sessions?
The battalion ones were platoon sergeant and above. So get the NCO and officer relationship there. The company level ones, it depends. Some were officer focused. Everything was an invite to the NCOs as well. But if there's something out there that I'll just admit I did not do as well as other things that I really hope you guys can crack the code on out there, is incorporating your NCO core more heavily into your leader development. It's something for you first sergeants out there that are listening to this, for you command sergeants major, and then for you platoon leaders, out there, pull in the NCOs and really incorporate them. We got our guys involved in the tactical discussions, and they were always invited to some of the art and science of leadership type discussions. And sometimes they came, but more often than not, they were busy handling the daily business while I was ripping their platoon leader away from them to do leader development. So certainly a shortcoming in our program.
And I'm curious, what did your character development team building sessions look like? How did you embed the profession of arms and what it means to be a professional and the professional military ethic into your daily operations or your training?
Yeah, so a lot of it was discussion based, and then a lot of it also was taking a look at the individual actions of our leaders and pointing out what right looks like. You got to reward what you want to see more of. You see guys out there preaching A and then rewarding B. And that's a recipe to get more of B, not more of A. So I think the way that we really instilled that professional ethic was first, talking about it. And it's not just through, it's not just through reading in the Army. I mean, some of it, sure, we read, Infantry Attacks by Rommel. We read Once an Eagle. And we worked through some of those and talked it. But being a pro is the same in most organizations. The Army, Amazon, Forbes, the federal government. Being a pro has a lot of the same foundations. And so we worked through those. And then when I saw someone doing it right, or when another leader saw someone doing it right, we recognized them so that people could see, hey, listen, we're watching. And we're trying to point out what is going right in the organization.
Yeah, I think reinforcing those public examples of the behavior that you expect is incredibly important and essential to shaping the culture of your organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, under looking at your bio, you have had two commands at your current duty station, and a couple episodes ago we talked with Nate Wyke, who also had two commands, and that was focused on commanding an HHC versus a line company. How did your approach differ between your HHC and your current line company command?
Yeah, they were two different beasts, both by nature of one being a headquarters command with varying occupational specialties and missions, and because my HHC was actually an HHT. It was a headquarters and headquarters troop in our cavalry squadron. And as an infantryman, that was a completely new experience for me and a new organization. The constant, though, was leadership centered on values and standards. In both commands, we set out by defining who we were through shared values. And this was a discussion with the section NCOICs and above in HHT and the squad leaders and above in Apache Company. Once we knew who we were, everything centered back on that, to include our leader development. As we talked earlier, having to recognize what you want to see more of in the organization, that was another constant between the two. But they were definitely different. Technically and tactically focused LPDs is where you can see the most variation in leader development between the two commands. HHT focused more on recon and security, securing the rear area of our squadron, the logistical and reporting framework, and mission command architecture of the organization, and other headquarters-focused capabilities. I mean, in there we went to NTC two times for two rotations with only 9 months in between. So there was a large focus on preparing for that experience, whereas in the line command we were preparing for Pacific Pathways rotation in the PACOM IOR. Ultimately, the process was the same, though. Define who we are, create a framework within the battle rhythm, apply a curriculum to ensure we're improving in all areas, leverage individual engagements or touch points, and then finally, stay centered on values.
Oh, I really like, I really harp on intentionality and deliberate practice, and I wrote a couple blogs about that. So I got two follow-on questions to that one. First, you mentioned you engaged your section leaders above or squad leaders and above to get clarity on who you are. Practically, what did that look like? Was it a sensing session? How'd you get buy-in from your first line leaders on establishing some shared values?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first one for HHT, we went out down into DuPont, which is right outside Post, and we had a little sectioned off room of a restaurant down there, and we talked and we developed what's our vision, and it was really both a working session and an LPD on vision casting and creating vision, simplifying it, making it something that guys will and gals in the organization will respond to. And then we split up into little teams, and I cross-pollinated the different sections. So the S2 NCOIC might have been with the S4, and so on. And they came up with words that linked to values that they thought meant something to them and to the organization. And then we worked through that. Shifting to Apache Company, certainly a different culture. Going from an HHT with multiple MOSs to a bunch of hardened infantrymen, and bringing them in, especially the squad leaders who were sergeants and staff sergeants and above, and saying, "Hey, we're going to talk about values today." You could see in their eyes at first they were like, "I don't know what is this?" And I think it took time, it took talking about it, it took being about it, it took incorporating into everything to show them, "Hey, this is something real, and this is who we are." So for that one, the motto was "On the Warpath." And that was the motto of the company when I came in. It had been the motto for a long time, dating back through the Iraq deployments. And so we took that and I said, I want to define what "On the Warpath" means. So let's just take Warpath. And being a coach's son, hustle is my favorite word in the English language. So I said, listen, I take the letter H. I'm picking that one. It's hustle. But the rest of the letters in Warpath are yours. Let's have a discussion. And it got kind of heated. It came a heated argument between, are we aggressive or are we authentic for that first A? Or, are we this or are we that? Is the W for warfighter or is it for winning? Because, we want to win at everything. And the discussion was really great, over the span of about 45 minutes. And at the end of it, we all walked away with an agreement. And that agreement was, this is who we are. This is what we're going to live by. This is what it means to be in this company. And we're going to hold each other and everyone in it to this standard.
That's awesome, Doug. I love the idea of an offsite. And I wish I could have done that a little more with my company command. We sort of do that with the cadets here as we get aligned on what our values and mission and vision for each semester are. So I had two following questions. Now I have three. So you sparked another question. So you said you were going to hold everyone that got aligned, and we're going to hold your teammates accountable. How, when someone new came into the company, how did you do that integration counseling or onboarding counseling to tell them, here are the expectations of Apache Company?
Yeah, absolutely. So the everyone, well, I'm sure I missed a few. I am not perfect, and I know there are multiple times where my training room would come to me and say, "Hey, sir, we got three new soldiers you haven't talked to yet." And my answer sometimes was, "Hey, let me get them tomorrow." So I'm sure someone slipped through the cracks, but if they did, they were going to hear it on Friday for what people call safety briefs, and we call it story time. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But for the onboarding, if it was a new leader, they came in specifically one that I rated or senior rated. Obviously, we talked about it in initial counseling, and we walked through that and really harped on the fact that these values aren't just something that came up with or that I just brought in here. These were created by their peers, superiors or subordinates, depending on what their level of the organization was, in those squad leaders and above. For new soldiers, it wasn't initial counseling. It was an onboarding process. So we had a really good thing going in HHT, where over the span of 9 months, we hadn't had a single negative SIR. And then out of the blue, we had a DUI. And I'll back up, SIR is a serious incident report for anyone out there who isn't common with or isn't caught up to that terminology. So no real incidents, and all of a sudden we have a DUI. We start peeling back the onion on that, and this was a kid who'd come to us from another troop. and had only been there a week. Could we in that week have changed something? Yeah, I don't know. But what we realized and what my brigade commander really was able to point out to me is, hey, culture can't be something that you try to set in the first week and then you let it go by the wayside. And so looking at that, deliberate onboarding has been a big thing that our organization tried to push with. And that's not just me, that's at the platoon level, at the squad level, bringing guys in. And so what that looks like at my level is anytime new soldiers come in, training room knows, hit them up with our shared values, print them off for them, and then walk them over to my office and try to sit down with them and talk to them about how those were created, what those look like, and then practically what we expect out of them. So, examples of what it means to be a pro, which is the P in Warpath. What does that mean? And so we talk about, that means when you're sitting in the back and you think you got nothing to do as a private or a specialist, and you think, oh man, I'm just wasting my time. No, you're being a waste of time. You get up and go to the arms room and draw out a weapon. Pick three buddies, go draw a weapon out of the arms room and do ready up drills. Oh, you think that's boring? Well, that's what pros do. Derek Jeter hits off a tee. Ray Lewis works on the first 6 inches of his step from the position in which he's standing. Pros work on the little things. And so that's some of the practical stuff we would talk about in that onboarding. And then, like I said, if they missed it, they would catch it in story time, because every Friday for us isn't a safety brief, because we've gotten to the point where I don't need to look at a group of men and say, don't get a DUI this weekend. Don't do this weekend. Instead of being rules focused, we're values focused. Rules are limiting. Values are what adults have. Adults live by values, and if you do that, then you're not going to do the things that break the rules. So we're able to use that Friday time as a means to recognize people doing the right thing, and to pour back into our vision, because vision leaks.
I mean, I think that is a transformational quote right there. Rules are limiting. Values provide, I think, freedom, and having a values-based culture versus a rules-based culture, especially in the Army, which is a large bureaucracy, can help change a lot of small unit cultures and focus. Hey, for the sake of time, I'm gonna move on to question four. So we talked a lot about sort of structured high-level organizational development. How did you personally assess the individual leader development needs of your immediate teammates that you rated or senior rated? How did you get down to the individual level and assess those needs?
Yeah, this is really important. So I'm glad we're talking about it. This is where the fluidity and personal relationship comes in. You can't build a leader development curriculum in a vacuum. And that's why you hear me using inclusive pronouns like we, us, and our. The collective is referring to the team, all those involved. It's not just me as the commander developing them. We're developing each other, and we're on a journey together. We use initial counselings and our onboarding that we just talked about for the new soldiers and other interactions to do two things that might seem counterintuitive. The first one is to communicate the idea of the team, over the individual. And this is done with our shared values and our understanding of the standard. And then two is showing that the team cares about them as an individual. Those two ideas aren't mutually exclusive. And so for understanding individuals better, use StrengthsFinder 2.0 and the Myers-Briggs to get to know them, and then keep that in mind when determining developmental opportunities. You're not just throwing names at additional duties. You really got to think through intentionally who's the best for this duty, and then who also could gain the most from doing this job. Who could improve and develop most? So when proctoring discussions, I may pose questions to certain individuals to draw out the introverts so they don't get steamrolled by the extroverts. The same goes with assigning those additional duties with live fire or project officers and NCOs. They all serve as a means to assess and develop individuals, and then that feeds the ongoing dialogue between the individual and his or her rater or senior rater. Capturing it requires a feedback loop, and like most things, the Army gives you the answer to that. It's monthly events-based counseling.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think we have a habit. So a couple of things that I'm going to pull from that discussion. We have one thing, we have a habit in the Army of really relying on our thoroughbreds. So you'll find your high speed E5 or E6 in your company level that has 7 additional duties and gets on the verge of burnout because he or she's always being relied on. And secondly, I think you brought up this concept of the extroversion bias that especially sort of affects our formations, where the prototypical model of a strong leader, someone who speaks up and is 6'3", square jaw, can crush APFD and charge the hill, when you've got to find opportunities to let your more introverted leaders, as Susan Cain in the book Quiet really highlights, to flourish. And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, look, I'm an extrovert. If you can't tell from the conversation, I am an extrovert, and I love every lieutenant that I've had, like I love my kids. They're different, and I love them differently, but the same amount. But let me tell you, two of them have been introverts, and those two have made such a massive impact on me. And really, they're the type of leader that I respect a lot, because it's something I just can't do. And that's someone who is more steady. They are always steady. I'm an emotional leader, and sometimes that's a great strength, and sometimes that's a weakness. Those guys are just ducks on a pond, and even when their feet are going a million miles a minute underneath, everything's cool, calm, and collected. So I've loved working with those two lieutenants, and I've really learned a ton from them.
Well, I am every Myers-Briggs test I've taken, I've come out as an INTJ, which is pure introvert. And this this starting a podcast was a little bit more of my challenge to get out of that shell a little bit. Did you steal that duck out of a pond metaphor from Zach Mirova's blog post?
You know, to be real honest, if I did, I don't even know. So much of what I talk about is stolen, because I'm constantly when you listen to podcasts, exactly where it's all from. So like I talked about the team earlier. I'm a huge Ravens fan, and I'm a huge John and Jack and Jim Harbaugh fan.
Gotcha.
I love all of them, even though I think Jim can sometimes get a little out there. And that is the Army's plagiarism, and I've probably stolen a lot of it from guys out there. For you West Point listeners, don't plagiarize. That's not an academic thing.
Right, but you'll hear that there is no such thing as stealing or stealing professionally in the Army and borrowing products.
Yep.
And I like Zach's post on from the Green Notebook about be the duck.
Yep.
So a couple more questions here. Moving on to moving on from more formal to informal leader development, and we touched on it a little bit earlier. The informal leader development is more of the opposite approach to what we've been discussing today, and I want to spend a few minutes here to have a dialogue on how we can utilize informal engagement opportunities and activities, such as having on the Humvee top discussion during command maintenance, as opportunities for leader development to reinforce values, objectives, and priorities. How did you get after it, and what are your thoughts on informal leader development?
So examples of this are building your LPDs around a dialogue, and then allowing that dialogue to evolve based on where your audience takes it. Don't feel tied to the script. You're going to have conversations, with your audience, with your squad leaders, with your platoon leaders, with your platoon sergeants. And if it goes off what you had planned, go with it. Because sometimes that's the best stuff. Another example is scheduling time with no formal purpose. So one of the carryovers in my battle rhythm that I had from the troop to the company was an officer coffee, and it was just kind of up there. There was nothing really next to it. I hadn't even talked about it. I'd kind of forgotten about it. And we're in a training meeting, and at the end of the training meeting, we pull up the battle rhythm, and I say the same thing that I said each time, was, hey, is there anything here that's not working or that we need to change? And one of my platoon leaders said, hey, what's that officer coffee? I said, that's a good point. I used to do that in my last troop, and I described who it was, and he said, well, let's start doing that. And so that's what we did. We took that little time block on Fridays, and we would either drive to Starbucks as a team, or walk down the little path to the coffee shop that was right there in our footprint. And sometimes I would text out an article or a topic the night before, and sometimes I wouldn't text anything. We just have a conversation, and sometimes we'd end up in my office just exploring the rabbit hole that is YouTube. But even those topics that may not seem professional or professionally grounded serve as an opportunity for you to connect with your team, to share experiences, and to build trust. So, you know, on the same topic, something I just want to throw out here is you hear the phrase, it's called leadership, not likership. You may hear that a lot. And I just want to say, in the same vein of thinking about informally connecting with your team, that just seems so lazy to me. The fact of the matter is, if they love you, if they respect you, if they enjoy working with you, and vice versa, you got to love them, respect them, and enjoy working with them, they're going to perform better for you. Every single engagement is an opportunity to build that relationship. So whether it's formal or informal, don't waste it.
Yeah, I'm, as you're like speaking, I'm reminded of the scene in like Band of Brothers where Major Winters at the time is like walking the line the foxholes out at the Battle of Bastogne and just checking on his men. And I've used him so many times to talk to my cadets of his men followed him because of how he cared for them and trained them hard. And I think that's such a, you know, really powerful example. And how I got after informal leader development was really through my interactions and engagements at opportunities like command maintenance. First time of the day, you have your whole formation there, or first time of the week, you have your whole formation there, and pull my lieutenants aside while they're supervising, you know, PMCS, and having that discussion of what, giving them some feedback, you know, in the moment feedback. It is a 365, it's a 365, you know, day job to continually provide those opportunities. And we like to say here at West Point with the cadets that every opportunity, with every engagement with the cadet, is an opportunity for leader development. You just got to be ready, kind of be prepped for that.
What drove, if you don't mind my asking, what drove some of the topics that you would talk about in those Monday discussions? Did you find that it was an email that had just come out from hire, or something you listened to over the weekend? What kind of fed you, and what you were then going to pass on to them in those Monday engagements?
Hey, thanks for asking me a question. I like where this is going. Me personally, so I'm an engineer officer commanding FSC, so I had multifunction logistics officers and one engineer as a teammate of mine for the PLs. And I really wanted to teach them more on the fundamentals of counseling and career management. And for my XO, who had never been a hand receipt holder, but was essentially my supply officer, taking him along when I was doing my change of command inventory so he could learn how to do change of command inventories, trying to figure out where of the sort of breadth of knowledge that isn't expected of each officer, figuring out where those weaknesses and gaps were and trying to fill those gaps.
Yeah, that's awesome, especially like you said, taking your XO around. I mean, it sounds like you that you identified maybe a capability gap with him in that, or an experience gap that he hadn't, you know, had before, and then we're prepping him for the next level. I don't know if he's gone on to be a company commander yet, but I'm sure when he does, he'll draw on that experience.
Yeah, and one thing I had the opportunity to be a battalion maintenance officer as an engineer in my first battalion, and so my big XO, battalion XO, he was really big on getting copies of the PS magazine, which is a lost, like it's a lost resource, lost art. It's still there, and so we got copies, and every month I would consolidate some relevant articles to push them out on like the maintenance of an MRAP or the maintenance of a route clearance piece of equipment. And I borrowed that technique and gave that task to my maintenance platoon leader, who, as an engineer, was sort of out of his element and wanted to give him some visibility in front of the whole battalion. So he would send it out to the battalion, all the XOs in the battalion, the frontline leaders who were doing command maintenance, to reinforce this principle of command maintenance discipline and giving them another resource to plug into on some unique NSNs or whatever is in that hidden gem of the PS magazine.
Yeah, that's an awesome TTP.
Yeah, it was somewhat effective. You know, I haven't gone through grad school and learning about, you know, leader development myself. I wish I could have a second chance and feel like I'd be a much better commander. But that's, you know, I'll get another chance as an XO or three here in a couple months or a couple years.
Isn't that the Army, though? I mean, as soon as you think you got it figured out, you move you on, and then the next position you're in, you either do one of two things. Either one, remember how much you didn't know, you know, and what you know now and wish you could do it again, or two, you decide to forget how much you didn't know, and you think you know, you knew then everything you know now.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Hey, so let's switch gears here a little bit. And part of your side hustle is your weekly blog, blog/email, titled "Hey in the Bar Leader." So, cue our listeners in on what you provide through that platform, and how'd you come up with the name?
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, leadership a passion, and I couldn't see myself just limiting it to the framework of my daily job. And so, "Hey in the Barn" started out without the name. As just a distro email that I sent out across the battalion when I was an AS3. And it was one part passion, and the other part an escape in between oar strokes while I was rowing in the three shop. And so at the time, I was writing as a completely separate venture for some online blogs and infantry magazine. And what was originally just an email through my .mil account with weekly PDF articles attached that covered three areas of targeted growth, being leadership, military pro D, and then the tactical athlete, later morphed into a much more professional and comprehensive product at the encouragement of Lieutenant Colonel Drew Stedman. After I wrote for his blog, The Military Leader, he pulled, you know, kind of gave me a call and encouraged me to combine my weekly email and my writing to become something that could more widely contribute to the profession. And so, you know, Hay in the Barn was born as a social media platform and community through Facebook and Twitter. The name is a little more difficult, and I get that question a lot, which tells me that it'd be a really lousy title if I were an entrepreneur and trying to make a living off this. The phrase is used a lot in sports, and being a coach's son, it's something I grew up around. So it comes from the adage that hay in the barn is money in the bank. It's the work being done. It's the result of great effort. In sports, the hay is put in the barn through practice all week long, and you shut the barn door on game day. So I was reminded of the phrase with my second battalion commander when I was in the 101st, Colonel Alex DeVerona, and he was a massive influence on me, and he used to use that phrase as a title for his weekly priorities that he sent out to commanders. So I may have been a mediocre athlete at best, but I always my coaches. So when it came time to name the initiative, Hay in the Barn just felt right, and thank God I'm not trying to make money off this, or I probably would never get the name out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like it because it's interesting, and as a former high school and college athlete myself, I use sports metaphors a lot, and whether it's, you know, chopping wood or putting the work in, or using the sage Allen Iverson quote of talking about practice, that seems to connect with the 18 and 26-year-olds that I talk a lot. So how can our listeners connect with the Hay in the Barn Leader?
Yeah, so you can connect via Facebook with Hay in the Barn LDR, so Leader is the acronym there, LDR, or on Twitter with the same handle, at Hay in the Barn LDR. Or you can just reach out to me. If you don't want to connect with Hay in the Barn, but you, I don't know, maybe you have a question about something we talked about today. Maybe you're looking for any of the products, kind of like the PowerPoint stuff behind some of the leader development we talked about. You can look me up on Global. I'm Thomas E. Meyer, and so in Global, you've heard me being called Doug throughout the podcast, and that is my name. But on Global, you'll find me as Thomas.E.Meyer26. Please don't hesitate to hit me up. I've relied heavily on a community of leaders and peers out there to help me throughout the years, and I'd love to add value to anything you guys need.
All right, Doug, before we let you go, I want you to point our listeners to other resources not already mentioned that you routinely use for organizational, leader, and we'll say personal or physical development.
Yeah, so I already talked about From the Green Notebook and The Military Leader, and then I obviously use the Leaders Huddle podcast, and I include a list at the bottom of my weekly emails that's more expansive, but a couple right now. I'm really loving what Josh Bowen is doing, Bowen is doing with 3x5 Leadership, and Major Josh Powers with the Field Grade Leader, And then, you know, mediums like Harvard Business Review and the Entree Leadership Podcast are always great resources. And another great opportunity that's coming up here, you know, on in the beginning of October is on October 9th at 1330, the AUSA conference in Washington, D.C. will have a panel on social media and the future of leadership, where I'll be there for the panel, but I'm going to be completely outclassed by the other panelists, which are Major Joe Byerly, Dr. and Colonel retired Jim Greer, and then Dr. Rebecca Johnson. And as I said, we're going to talk about social media and the future of leader development, and you can either catch us there in person in D.C. or tune in to Hand the Barn Leader on Facebook, and I'll try to live stream the event. This is three giants on stage talking about this stuff. To give you an example, Dr. Johnson is the Marine Corps War College Dean of Academics and Deputy Director. So I'll be up there just trying not to bring the collective IQ of the group down too far.
That's awesome, Doug. We last year that conference kind of helped put us on the map with notifications that we got from Major Byerly at that same conference. So I think this episode should post around that time, and it'll be a good little preview. And sounds like we use the same resources. We roped Josh Bowen into helping us out with the podcast and brought him on the team. And you know, he's going to be a TAC officer here next year, and his cadets are really lucky. I love the Entree Leadership podcast. That was really my first real resource I started listening to for leader development. And they've got a couple upcoming episode with Mike Irwin, who we've interviewed before too, about his book. Really thank you for your time. Like I said, it's been a couple months in the making. Really excited what you got going for your career and Hay in the Barn Leader, and for everything you're doing just to advance the discussion and the professional development, not just in the organization, but across the Army. So as we wrap up, thanks again, Doug, and I look forward to reconnecting in the future.
Yeah, thanks a lot, David. You guys are awesome. And the whole community out there in Twitter, connect with some of these guys. You know, connect with them, connect with David and Caldall and Leaders Huddle on Twitter for all you leaders out there, because they are responsive. They message back to you, and it's just an awesome community to be a part of. So I'm really honored to talk to you today, and thanks for adding value to my life today. I learned a lot from you. Thanks.
All right, well, this wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. Next week, we're going to do a quick episode on breaking down Army publications, where to find them, how to use them, and provide a list of the most important. You can tweet to us directly at using our handle at leaders_huddle. Find us on iTunes and Google Play, and leave us a rating and review when you get a chance. Until next time, get out there and make a difference in your organization. This is the Leaders Huddle podcast, signing off. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.